In this week's program, The Museum of Innocence by the Turkish writer Orhan Pamuk. This is a novel about two obsessions, a young businessman's love for a shop girl, and his determination to capture forever the intensity of that relationship by collecting anything that reminds him of her. It's set in Istanbul between 1975 and 1984. Pamuk introduces us to a society whose bourgeoisie aspires to all things European. This theme dovetails with the interest of the lover in constructing a private museum. Towards the end of the novel, he says that what Turks should be showing in their museums are not bad imitations of Western art, but their own lives. And that's what the Museum of Innocence by Orhan Pamuk sets out to do, with me, Julia Carlson, and Adrian Kenny. In this extract from the novel, Kemal, the chief protagonist, visits the boutique where Fusun works. He's returning a designer handbag, which his fiancée, Sibel, has told him is a fake.
She began to cry softly. I have never worked out exactly how it happened, but I wrapped my arms around her, and she leaned her head against my chest and wept. Fusun, I'm so sorry, I whispered. I caressed her soft hair and her forehead. Please just forget this ever happened. It's a fake handbag, that's all. Like a child, she took a deep breath, sobbed once or twice, and burst into tears again. To touch her body and her lovely long arms, to feel her breasts pressed against my chest, to hold her like that, if only for a moment, made my head spin. Perhaps it was because I was trying to repress the desire, more intense each time I touched her, that I conjured up the illusion that we had known each other for years, that we were already very close. This was my sweet, inconsolable, grief-stricken, beautiful sister. For a moment, and perhaps because I knew we were related, however slightly, her body with its long limbs, fine bones, and fragile shoulders reminded me of my own. Had I been a girl, had I been 12 years younger, this is what my body would be like. There's nothing to be upset about, I said, as I caressed the blonde hair.
Michael James Ford reading from The Museum of Innocence by Orhan Pamuk. With me, Julia Carlson and Adrian Kenny. Adrian, you lived in Istanbul. At what stage? What period?
In the mid-80s, I was there teaching in a lycée. A lot of French words in Turkish imported. You see in the novel too, the shop is even called the Champs-Élysées, spelt Turkish style, where Fusun works, the poor relation, Kemal's poor relation.
What did you make of the novel?
I thought the middle was like a bed without, a centre. It just sank. I was enthralled by the beginning and I loved the end. But the middle made me think that really there was too much being put on too little of a scaffolding, that there was too much. It's rife with symbols from the opening page where we see the hero is called Kemal, the same name as the founder of modern Turkey, Kemal Atatürk. The Bosphorus, which divides Asian Turkey from Istanbul, in which so much of the action happens, as if to say they're torn between East and West. The constant weighing of Turkey against the standards of Europe and trying to work out. I was reminded also of Joyce's Ulysses, Joyce saying he wanted to forge the uncreated conscience of the people. What is a Turk? What does it mean to be a Turk nowadays?
Yeah, it's a very ambitious novel in that sense.
Very ambitious. So I think in spite of my criticisms, the symbolism works. It carries an argument through to a logical resolution.
Julia Carlson, what did you think of it?
I enjoyed this novel enormously. I enjoyed it from start to finish. I found it absolutely absorbing. I found it extraordinarily rich in terms of the way in which it negotiated the narrative, dealing with Western kind of narrative traditions, incorporating into that Turkish film, Turkish mythology, Turkish narrative traditions. I felt that there was a wonderful creation of character culture, an exceptional creation of place, that Istanbul is as strong a character in the novel as the central figure, that it moved very nicely from kind of social, almost kind of novel of manners in the beginning, into a kind of novel about somebody who was extremely disturbed and becoming progressively more self-absorbed. And in fact, that a great deal of the kind of monotony, I would say, of the second half of the book is actually very much related to this man's state of mind. I had never read anything by Orhan Pamuk before, and I certainly will read more. Yeah.
In terms of exploring Turkishness, the meaning of Turkishness, I mean, the shadow of Europe is here all the time, right through, isn't it? You know, Europe is the place to look up to and so on.
Yeah, we have to remember that 95% of Turkey is in Asia. And Istanbul is on the western margin, on the European side of the Bosphorus. And this is set in one very small part of European Istanbul. So there is the looking down all the time. These people are, they're the equivalent of, say, the Fianna Fáil party's children in Ireland. These are the people whose fathers fought with Ataturk and made a republic. And now they have money and they're working out who they are. So there is a dialogue going on constantly. Fusun, who works in the shop, is a poor relation of Kemal, the hero, who is being drawn to Sibel. He's engaged to her, in fact, who, God save us, has been to school in Paris. Yes. What on earth are we doing?
Have more liberated attitudes, and you know, in terms of sleeping with men before marriage and so on, that kind of thing.
Well, she does and she doesn't. This, in many respects, is a novel about virginity. Yes. And taboos. And one of the things the narrator tells us is that he is playing the role of an anthropologist, and that he is introducing people. He's often making references to people who are going to read this novel in the way distant future, and explaining to them kind of the traditions of his people. But the obsession with virginity is here in a very strong kind of way. And Sibel, even though she has been to school in Paris and is prepared to, in the language of the novel, give herself to Kemal, at the same time is only prepared to do this in the context of a certain marriage in the future. And when that doesn't happen, the relationship falls apart, she feels herself to be a fallen woman.
Yeah, I mean, there is, Adrian, an ambiguous attitude to virginity in this sense that, on the one hand, the girls from westernized families will sleep, perhaps, with their boyfriends, but yet they're still going to be judged as not having done the right thing.
I suppose this is one of my criticisms of the book, the symbolism. In a way, Fusun, the shop girl, is Kathleen Ni Houlihan of Turkey. She's the pure virgin. She symbolises Turkey, and how can Kemal have her and at the same time be a Western man? So there's an argument going on here above the naturalistic argument, which I think he almost succeeds in dealing with. But it's sometimes I think there are longers where you say, oh, come on. For example, when the gossip columnist reveals that, for the listeners, Sibel goes back to Paris, Kemal starts going out again with Fusun. A gossip columnist reveals to the whole of Istanbul that this bourgeois, rich businessman is going out with this girl. And just as this is revealed, a ship blows up in the Bosphorus. And there are these terribly heavy symbols. Yeah. And yet, in a melodramatic way, they work.
What about the obsession itself, Julia, did it work for you? Was it convincing, you know, that somebody would look back on an event, a series of events, with that degree of intensity?
Yes, I think it was convincing for me. But I would say that I think that the whole novel is being played out in the context of Turkish melodrama. And there's a reference at one point where Sibel says that love is a balance of equals, and Kemal says, I believe in Turkish films. Yes. And the melodrama that's occurring is paralleled all the way through with the melodrama in the Turkish films that he goes to watch in in the outdoor cinemas, with in the cinema gardens, with Fusun and her family. So that the obsession, I think, has to be seen in that context as well.
I also like the lightness with which he deals with Turkish issues and the Turkish questions. You know, I mean, he foregrounds the obsession with the shop girl so much that they're just a very kind of light strokes in the background.
And yeah. the intimate detail of Istanbul gives it a great lift and a great honesty. I found, again, I have to come back to this symbolism. Fusun is fobbed off with a pretty harmless young filmmaker, Feridun,
yes.
Who's bankrolled by Kemal. But when they part and Kemal resumes after watching television for 7 years with the family, my God, yes. Fusun reveals that she's never slept with her husband, yeah. Which is, I think that's pushing it a
bit. Yeah. By the way, for 8 years, Kemal invites himself to Fusun's parents' house for dinner some, I think, 1,593 times. And every night they watch the country's single television channel together.
Yeah.
Any kind word I heard before I left the house, any gentle or positive remark Fusun or the others offered me, however ambiguous, was enough to sustain hope, to revive the conviction that I would win Fusun back one day, that all these visits had not been in vain. In such a gladly deluded state, I could take my leave relatively untroubled. A pleasant comment from Fusun at the dinner table at an unexpected moment. For instance, "You went to the barber, I see. He took off a lot, but it looks good." May 16th, 1977. Or turning to her mother, "He enjoys his meatballs like a little boy, doesn't he?" February 17th, 1980. Or on a snowy evening a year later when I had just walked in, "We haven't sat down to eat yet, Kemal. We were just saying how much we all hoped you'd be joining us." And I would feel so happy, however dark the thoughts I'd brought with me, however discouraging the signs I read as we watched television, that when the time came to leave, I could rise from my chair decisively, retrieving my coat from the hook beside the door and say, "With your permission, sir, I'll be off."
Michael James Ford reading from The Museum of Innocence by Orhan Pamuk. I note from this novel that television arrived in 1971, a decade after our own. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would have seen, was television as obsessive an interest when you were there?
Well, when you'd be at night, you'd hear it racketing from the balconies. I mean, the country people would have, the first thing they got was they put up a house. They came in every day at something like 1,000 people still arrive in Istanbul from Anatolia. And you have to bear in mind that they are all women wearing headscarves, and yeah. They're coming from villages where virginity is absolutely crucial. And as you know, there are murders still committed in Anatolia over this question. So I shouldn't criticise them that much for seeming to make this great war, because there is a war. A friend was telling me the other day in Istanbul that they call the women who wear black chadors in the streets, they call them Kara Fatma, black beetles, because they see this coming. There is a great war still going on in Istanbul, in Turkey, between the secular tradition and the Islamic one.
He treats this, doesn't spend a lot of time on it. For example, he says in the early years of the Republic, the parents were not disrespectful of religion under Atatürk, but just indifferent to it.
Indifferent, yeah.
Does that capture it? Yeah.
Yeah, and to be slightly wary, he talks about the boorish repetition of the word Allah by the imam. They don't like this basic, fundamental country form of religion. They want something more, and yet they want to be, you know, Muslim at the same time. So it's about identity to a great extent.
His visits to the Keskin house, and he kept going there night after night. What did you make of all of that?
Well, his whole life revolves around going to supper, as he calls it, with the family, and his 1,593 suppers that he has there, and each evening sitting there watching television with the family. And what you were saying, I mean, the television is absolutely the centrepiece of this. Fusun's mother positions herself so that she can watch the television. All the conversation revolves around it.
Sorry,
every night is the same.
Sorry for getting cross you, but yeah. he also positions himself so that he can watch Fosoun and
watching
the television.
Yes, and so that he can see what her emotions are as she's watching the television. Yes. But one thing about it is how, in a sense, how cocooned he is. How cocooned he is within this family, where, as he says, when he it's in a poor neighbourhood, a neighbourhood of Italian and Levantine communities brought together, not a traditional Muslim community, but he's seeking a certain identity, as you were saying, that it's about identity, in relation to himself, away from his wealthy, westernised family. And he's cocooned in this way. He's also cocooned from the politics that are going on around him. And, I mean, there are coups going on in the course of this novel. And they just happen in a sentence.
Yeah, but on that very point, I noticed that he's not talking just about himself, but he more or less says, Adrian, that everyone is apolitical. Is that so? That they went about their lives as if you sort of, you know, indifferent to what was going on.
There was a lot of rioting. And, you know, even when I was there, there'd be the...
I don't mean that there weren't things, you know, these activities going on, but he's saying that the people more or less ignore them insofar as they could. Is that true?
I think that's probably true, I want to, before leaving that, the ham symbolism again. Fosoun and Kemal decide to marry, as we read, and they are going then to France, to Europe. So it works, this great scene of them, the family Chevrolet, all these old American cars in Istanbul. They're going to drive through Greece up to Europe. Fosoun takes the wheel and it's impossible. How can this pure Turkish woman with no identity, in other words, how can Turkey merge with the West? Yes. So she crashes into a tree. And Kemal then realises that there isn't yet a Turkish identity in the Western sense, I think. And he decides then to travel Europe, then the world, gathering not objet d'art, but the simple things he saw in Fosoun's flat.
Because they will forever remind him
of her.
Of her,
but then, I think, on a second level, that he says, while the West lives in pride, most of the world lives in shame. I'd like to change that. If the objects that bring us shame are displayed in a museum, they are immediately transformed into objects in which to take pride. We have no culture, no taste, no talent in the art of painting. What Turks should be viewing in their own museums are not bad imitations of Western art, but their own lives.
I mentioned that in my introduction. That seemed to me to be key.
I think it is.
That in fact he's really saying this is an act of national self-assertion.
Yes.
You know, the display of ordinary objects from ordinary lives.
And I think that's what Ulysses tried to do for Ireland, really.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that the point about shame is an important one. And from the very beginning, the whole concept of shame is associated very much with Turkish identity. The idea of the shame of the woman who becomes involved in a sexual relationship outside of marriage. His shame, again, in relation to what has happened to her, to what has happened to Sibel, and then a kind of sense of national shame is contrasted with Western pride. So a kind of recovery of identity becomes very important in the museum.
I love some of the narrative tricks he used, like saying things like, I have no desire to interrupt my story with descriptions of the street clashes between fervent nationalists and fervent communists, and then went ahead and did that precisely, you know.
There is a terrific scene which in many ways sums up, I think, the way he treats politics. And it has to do with after the 1980 coup, he and his chauffeur, because he's always driven around the city by his chauffeur, are trying to get home in time for the curfew. And they're stopped on the street by the military. And there's a he becomes obsessive about stealing things from Fosoun's home.
Yes.
And every day
he's
stealing things. That's right, China dogs.
But
this particular
money back, doesn't he? I mean,
he does. Eventually, he starts putting money back. Initially, he's kind of replacing the things that he's stolen. But on this particular occasion, he's found in the car with a quince grater. Fosoun and her mother have been making quince jelly all day, and he's stolen this grater. And the military says to him, "What is this?" And he is so overcome that he's unable to speak. He's overcome with shame, and he remembers a child from his childhood who was also overcome with shame in school. And finally, the chauffeur has to speak for him and say, this is a quince grater. But this is his political moment.
Yes.
So that it's a way, I mean, the whole political scene recedes in the background.
His desire to work towards a positive Turkish identity, nonetheless. He says, the Istanbul bourgeoisie trample over one another to own an electric razor, a can opener, a carving knife at a given time. But remind me, at what point did he become aware of the power of objects to evoke personhood and evoke people? So did that fairly early?
It's set in the 70s, but he's writing from the present time, so he's looking back. So there's an overvoice going through the novel in which he's anticipating from his later position of melancholy. We're told at the end he died in Milan in 2002 at the age of 62. He's investing the past with the insights of the future. So he takes the most unpromising material, a country without an identity, and he tries to splice it with all the skills of modern Western art. So if you remember in Martin Amis's novel Money, where the awful hero, meets Mart. Remember, he meets the author, Martin Amis. Well, in the same way, Pamuk appears himself at the end, Orhan Pamuk. Yes. Who is this young writer?
In fact, he appears at the engagement party
as
well.
That's right,
he does.
Where
he introduces him saying he's 23, nothing special about him. Yes.
And someone says, I liked your novel Snow, but it was pretty long.
Yes.
So he employs Pamuk to write the book.
Julia.
Yeah, for me, that's the one kind of element of the... Yes, it is. That's the one element
in the
novel. You
didn't like that?
Yeah, I didn't think that it was necessary. I thought that the novel worked extremely well as an almost realist kind of novel about obsession. And I thought that this little trick of putting himself in at the beginning at the engagement party and then becoming very self-referential at the end... what wasn't actually necessary, but it also, once you accept that it's there, it also changes the novel in a radical kind of way. And you realise that there's a great deal more kind of irony, I think, directed at the character, that the character is always being looked at from a critical perspective because of this addition into the narrative.
He's very good on things like smoking in Turkey. You know, how it's not done out of pleasure but out of habit, just to have something to do. I mean, that's the impression one has of countries like Turkey, people incessantly smoking. And he gets something about that, doesn't he?
I looked at the National Geographic magazine in my news agents yesterday. I saw it in one of the articles on Istanbul. I read that they've just banned smoking in Istanbul, which is incredible.
Really?
In shops and bars. And there was a riot, people marching up and down the street waving their fags. Not surprisingly.
45 years after Atatürk's revolution, the Turkish people had still not worked out how to go to the beach in bathing suits without embarrassment. So there's a fair amount of knocking of the society.
But there's also an enormous amount of very interesting social detail, I think. And the idea, for example, of certain words not existing in the Turkish language. For example, there's no word for flirt, we're told. And we're also told that whenever he's invited to Füsun's family's house, he's invited to come and sit together. And that the phrase for dropping in to visit, apparently, doesn't exist in Turkish. I mean, there's all these little bits about language. Then there are also, I mean, there are an enormous number of kind of just traditions are identified, I think, in a way which is very loving, very nostalgic in many respects.
He did massive research on museums, Adrian. I mean, on museums.
Yeah, it's slightly arch, isn't it? The way it
appears. You know, I thought it
appears at the end only, doesn't it, though?
Yeah,
when
sure.
she's died, he.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has to find a way of, I suppose...
he did a lot of work.
He did. Every museum in the world, the Edith Piaf Museum in Paris, every museum.
I like the Ava Gardner Museum in Smithfield, yeah. North Carolina, yes. And the American Tragedy Museum somewhere in
That's
Florida,
right.
Where there is the car that Jane Ma- or was the car because the museum is now closed that Jane Mansfield died
and
in.
His classification of collectors, you know, the two types, the ones who show what they have and the ones who hide the stuff. And he said the bashful ones collect solely for the sake of collecting. He's in which category is he? Because he does want to display, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'm probably intellectualizing it too much. I see this also as a novel about what is art.
That's fair enough.
Are these things that people, ordinary people have and don't know what to do with? Can you make somehow a form of art out of objects which don't have any cohesion, over which you have no intellectual control, that there's... And I think for that reason, I'd disagree with you, Julie, about Orhan Pamuk. I like the idea of this man being brought in to write it as if to say that we don't know what to do with all this stuff. It's the makings of art. Can you come in and put a shape on it? He talks about joining the dotted lines between each of these objects and trying to make a narrative out of them, which I thought was true to... the problems of art.
Yes,
that idea of joining the line and creating the narrative out of them fits in very much with a kind of another main subject in the book, I think, and that's the whole idea of time.
Yes.
He has somewhere around in the middle of the book, he has a chapter entitled Time, which is almost a little mini essay on the idea of time. And he finally draws on Aristotle as the idea
Mind
of time.
Mind you, he comes close to saying there that life is only a matter of peak experiences. I mean, that's what he really seems to be saying there. The rest don't matter. The other moments don't count.
Did you notice the absence of religion in any sense except the social sense in the book? You never have an imam dropping in as
that's
a
right.
priest would drop
yeah.
in Ireland.
Well, perhaps that's true to the whole Ataturk.
I suppose that's true. I don't know enough about it to comment.
But you both recommend this novel and you both...
Very much.
I do, very much, I do.
We've been discussing The Museum of Innocence by Orhan Pamuk, published by Faber and Faber. You can listen to our programme again on our website at rte.ie. My thanks to Julia Carlson and Adrian Kenny. Till next week, bye-bye.